Rawr.
Welcome to Wine Connoisseurs Rex podcast from Psalm for the Day. It's another podcast that, like all other podcasts, is different than the rest. This is a podcast for people who like wine, want to like wine, or actually stop liking wine because people can be too annoying about it. I'm your host, Edward Kuhnley. And now it's time for another episode of Wine Connoisseurs Rex.
Okay. Welcome back to another episode of Wine Connoisseurs Rex. This is a non-interview episode. This is really just going to be a focus on another cool topic that I enjoy talking about, which is sparkling wine. And for many of you, you know that I keep talking about champagne and not champagne. So I wanted to take about a half hour to break down the concept, the naming, the misconceptions of sparkling wine, and do it in a way that's somewhat palatable for you all. So I hope that we all get along after the end of this episode. So we're going to talk sparkling wine, literally all of it. And we're going to do it in three parts that ultimately have some sort of overlap. So as much as I will break it into three parts, you will hear me reference some of those other parts even before I really talk about them in detail. So kind of bear with me, but three parts. Those three parts are the grapes most often found in sparkling wine, the different methods used to make sparkling wine, and the regions most known for sparkling wine in the world. What I'm not going to talk about quite yet, for the sake of time, are going to be styles like Brut, Brut Nature, Demi-Sec, Extra Dry, etc. That is for another day, my friends. Another day. But we're going to have some fun as we talk through it. And my goal, as I said, is to keep it so that it is palatable, understood, and maybe get some people to not hate me when I say it's not champagne, but we'll get there. So, what's in my glass? Duh. Champagne. But it is champagne. This is the black label of Lanson. It is their Brut Champagne from Champagne. They are based in Rennes, France, which is on the northern side of the Champagne region. I reference region for a purpose. But this is a fantastic champagne. It's Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Pinot Meunier. Wow. You're going to hear those names in a little bit. But those are the three most common grapes in champagne. And the first two of those, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, are some of the most common grapes used for sparkling wine around the world. But Lanson, it's got a cool story. They are the official champagne of Wimbledon. They have been serving their champagne to the Royal Court of England since 1900. So they have a very long history that they'll probably get displaced by some sort of English sparkling wine in the coming years. Why would you be serving French wine in England when you can be serving English wine in England? But anyway, for another moment. But this is Lanson. It is their non-vintage. And this particular one has a base of the 2016 vintage. So a lot of the juice that went into this is 2016, but a non-vintage is often considered a bit of a house style. They do not focus on what the vintage produces to mess with that style that is created based on that season or that vintage. More so, they want it to be a style that when you buy it, you can trust that it's going to taste pretty close to what it's tasted like in the past, whether it was earlier this year or in years prior. But it is multiple years aged. I think it's 4 years aged. The bottle is sitting in my refrigerator right now. So let's go with 4 years aged. I'm almost positive on that. It spent some time on the lees. And I want to talk about that real quick before we get into kind of sparkling wine. You hear in the sparkling wine world, especially in champagne and in a lot of instances around the world where they use the traditional method, you'll hear the term lees aged or that it has aromas of brioche or bready notes. And so often we talk a lot about how a wine has an aroma like cherries, strawberries, green apple. And as we always like to point out, that those things aren't actually in your wine. They never came close to your wine. It's the aromatic compounds. However, lees are, this is gross, so hopefully you're not eating anything, dead yeast cells. It's not really gross, but everybody always cringes. They make it seem like I'm talking about like dead skin. So that's gross. Anyway, Lees are dead yeast cells that were used in the fermentation process for making the base wine of champagne, sparkling wine, whatever it is, traditional method, lees aged. And you can have lees aged still wines as well. But the reason I like to break it down to be called dead yeast cells is that's what is a base for bread. Literally, you use yeast to get the bread to rise. And with that, you get the brioche bready notes from the lees. This is one of the few aromas that few aroma styles that you will get because of the influence of the product that gave it its aroma. And what I mean by that is the lees give the yeasty component to bread and to sparkling wine. Some, you know, with oaks give off certain characteristics as well, but you'd be hard pressed to find a barrel that has actual dill in it, even though there are oak barrels out there that give off oak or dill compounds, but there's no dill in there. So this is really one of the only things that that wine will come in contact with that helps give it its aroma, which is brioche, bready notes. This one also has some really nice citrus to it. It also has a really wonderful dishwasher aroma to it because I use my Rito glasses, which are dishwasher safe, which is fantastic, but I left them in the dishwasher after they were finished too long. So I've got that really gross dried while damp aroma as well. That is not the sparkling wine. I know that for a fact, but you get some citrus, you get some apple, you get, you don't get any red notes, even though there's Pinot Noir in there because it didn't spend any time on the, really with the skins that give those compounds that Pinot Noir has. But it is fresh. It is delicious. It is the champagne of our house. So Lanson Champagne, Le Black Label Brut, non-vintage. So now we're going to jump into sparkling wine if you stuck around after that incredibly long description of a bottle of wine. So we're going to break down the obvious. There is something that champagne, the region, and the drink is amazing at, and it is called marketing. Just like Kleenex, Xerox, Coke, Coca-Cola, the list goes on. So we are going to go to a much more rudimentary level to kick this whole thing off. And guess what? We will come back to some of this in a little bit. Sparkling wine is wine with bubbles in it. It's bubbly. So that's where we're starting. Wine with bubbles. But before the bubbles, there's wine. And it's put together along the way. The wine comes from grapes. You nailed it. Have you ever seen champagne grapes at the grocery store? That's not what we're talking about. I don't know what those are exactly. They might taste like champagne, or that is a strain of grapes that exist. But champagne grapes do not make champagne nor any form of sparkling wine. So ignore all of that. This has nothing to do with it. But as I mentioned earlier, the two most common sparkling wine grapes used in the world are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And I'm going to tell you right now, we will not get to every single grape that makes champagne. We won't get into every single grape in the Champagne region on this episode. We won't get into every grape that makes sparkling wine around the world. I'm going to give you a nice little list in a second, but not all of them, just a whole bunch of them. Maybe we'll do a deep dive into the Champagne region at some point. But remember, before I go into this little list I'm about to share with you, this is wine made from grapes. That's where we need to start. We need broad terminology. Champagne, fortunately for them, unfortunately for a lot of the other sparkling wine regions of the world, marketed the hell out of themselves, grabbed their name back, but everybody still loves to use the term champagne and believes that champagne is the best. We can get to that later too, but we're going to start with the fact that sparkling wine is a wine made from grapes. Would you like to know what some of those grapes are? If you don't, just end the podcast now because I'm about to tell you. And if you do, stick around. I'm going to read them fast. I'm going to list them in the podcast notes so you can refer back to them. But there's a lot, so I don't want to waste all of our time just naming things. But there is Glera, Zorello, Macabeo, Perriata, Monastrell, Garnacha Tinta, Trepas, Shiraz, Chenin Blanc, Riesling, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Auxerrois, Sauvignon Blanc, Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, Grulot Noir, Grulot Gris, Pinot Donis, Moscato Bianco, Lambrusco, Pinot Nero, Pinot Bianco, Pedro Jimenez, not that one, the other one, Pinotage, Moscato. It's a lot of grapes. Why did I just do that? This goes back to that rosé episode of knowing what you are drinking. This is just the start of that. It isn't to scare you, but to open your mind to the fact that maybe you just haven't found your sparkling wine of choice, or you have and want to find the next great one. The most important part of these is the vast majority are going to be sourced from either high latitudes, high altitudes, and or have a cooling influence such as a body of water or a cooling wind. They need to ripen enough to remove the unripe aromas and flavors, but maintain their high acid. Just imagine if you're drinking a soda, even anything that is bubbly. A beer might make not as much sense here, so ignore beer, but like non-alcoholic things. You want that like sort of crispiness, the bite, the pop. A lot of that comes from acid in the production process. And in the world of sparkling wine, that acid is going to come from the grape itself. But we want to make sure that, you know, it's not an unripe aroma, because often as the sugar levels increase, the acidity decreases. And as that's all happening, it's during the ripening process. So you have to find the beautiful balance of making sure they're not unripe, because unripe flavors are called unripe for a reason. They're not quite ready unless you're looking for that. We're not looking for that. But anyway, for any of these grapes that go through the secondary fermentation, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, they will want to produce a low alcohol base wine and then increase another 1-2% in their secondary fermentation. What the hell am I talking about? Winemaking. There are a few methods, and I'm going to take you through those. But before I do that, so we've got grapes. Got it? Grapes. I'm going to actually refer back to that first one I listed in a few minutes. Just remember Glera, okay? Remember Glera. And I already told you about Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, but remember those two. I think those are going to be probably the most helpful in this particular episode as we break down what it is, what it isn't, and go from there. But the winemaking methods for sparkling wine are, I'm going to list 6.5. Anyway, traditional or champagne method, you can see either method champenoise. It can be in different languages. South Africa calls it Cap Classique, but champagne method, traditional method, method champenoise, method traditionnel, those are all the same thing, just in that sort of iteration of words and whatever. There's the transfer method, the ancestral method, tank method, Osti method, and carbonation. Those are going to make up probably 99% of the production in the world for sparkling wine. Maybe somebody's got something else going on there, but when I get into these a little bit more, you'll understand that they pretty much cover anything you could ever possibly imagine. If you've come up with something other than those, let me know and we can go into business together. But each of them serves a purpose based on the region, the tradition of the region, the cost, and even the grape that they're using. But most importantly, region, tradition, cost. Traditional method is where the second fermentation, remember fermentation is where we turn sugar into alcohol, where the second ferment, sugar turns into alcohol, carbon dioxide, and heat. Second fermentation takes place in the bottle. So we have put wine into a bottle. And what is added is this stuff. I'm going to get a little bit nerdy. Just bear with me. It's called liqueur de tirage. And it is added to the wine to kick off this second fermentation. It does not sweeten the wine. It takes, it puts some sugar in there and some yeast, and they use it to do a second fermentation. Second fermentation is literally what it's called. But they ferment the wine to dry. But the goal in this instance is not to increase a ton of alcohol. It's to get that carbonation. As I said, one of the outputs of sugar and yeast together is carbon dioxide, bubbles. Later on, they're going to do a process called riddling and disgorging. And riddling allows those, I talked to you about those yeast cells, to work their way to the neck of the bottle. And then they will disgorge and take that out. Like literally pull the, it'll be like frozen. It'll take a little thing out. If you're watching this, which I've never posted these online, I need to, it comes out, like they take it out. I'm pulling it out with my hand, like at least in the air. At that point, they add another liqueur called liqueur d'expédition. And it is added and tops off the bottle to determine the final sweetness. Does not have to happen. I've talked about there's no added sugar. This is like they're using rectified grape must. I always forget the RCGM. What it all rectified concentrated grape must. It's basically intensely sweet, sugary spark or juice, because must is what the liquid is before it becomes alcohol, before it becomes wine. But they add RCGM and some other little things that are legal and normal and not weird. And they're not adding like, you know, cyanide pills. But anyway, so they add that. So then you'll get those methods I said, or that those things I told you I'm not going to talk about. Brut Nature, they don't actually add any extra sweetness there. Brut, which is dry, extra dry, which is not as dry as Brut, which makes perfect sense, of course. Demi-sec, which means they sweeten it up quite a bit because it's more on the desserty side. So you've got a few different things that can come out of that. But I've talked a lot about traditional. So it's pretty involved. Lees aging, riddling, disgorging. You know, we're capping it off with liqueur de tirage, liqueur d'expédition. So surely there's got to be a cheaper method, right? Because this is all happening by bottle. That seems aggressive. There's the transfer method. In the transfer method, and again, you're going to see this on bottles. So this isn't just like random shit I'm sharing with you. This is actually on the bottle in the vast majority of instances. Or you can just do a quick little bit of research and say, oh, this is what I drink. How do they make it? Anyway, up to the riddling part, the transfer method and the champagne method, it's the exact same process. The process here changes when we go to that final bottle by bottle step where they do it in a tank. That's it. So when they're doing all the extra shit after they've riddled and disgorged, they dump it into a tank and it's like a pressurized tank. And then they do all of the things we talked about, adding some level of liqueur d'expédition. And they do that so that they can get an incredibly consistent level of sweetness across everything. Obviously, everything's measured across the board when they're doing it bottle by bottle in the traditional method. However, inevitably, there could be a tiny little bit of difference because you're literally trying to find a balance in 25 ounces of product. What is that perfect measurement? Something could be off by a millimeter, and that could be a difference. A millimeter in a tank, not a big deal. A millimeter in a 750 milliliters, absolutely, potentially a little bit different. So those are the first two methods, traditional and tank. For all intents and purposes, you can get a really great, traditional and transfer. I'm going to get to tank later. Traditional and transfer are basically the same. Transfer is a little bit cheaper, done in a tank versus in a bottle at the end. Then there's this one. And you're going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about, Edward? Ancestral method. Ancestral, not ancestral. Ancestral. Ever seen this one? Sounds pretty freaking weird. Partly fermented juice is bottled and then sugar is converted into CO2 and alcohol. You haven't heard of it? I bet you have. I'm not saying you've had it, but there is a newer movement of wine. This isn't new, but it's hitting the market differently now. It's called Pet Nat. So a more natural wine, Petillant Natural, I think is the exact name, but it's known on the shelf and in cool wine circles, if you want to call them cool. I don't know. I don't care. This is not about judgment. It's Pet Nat, made in the ancestral method. I slipped and said this earlier, didn't mean to, so I could just edit that out, but I'm not going to. Tank method. This is another one you may not actually have heard of because they're not necessarily putting this on the bottles. They might. You could check. Go check your fridge in a second because you might see it on a bottle I'm about to reference. But there's no riddling, no disgorging, no lees aging, no dosage. It's made in a tank. Tank method. It is used to make a fruitier, light, not to be aged type of sparkling wine. If you still don't know what I'm talking about, Prosecco is made in the tank method. And Prosecco is made with the Glera grape. So when you go have Prosecco and you're like, oh yeah, like I love champagne, and you pull out a bottle of Prosecco, you're literally like, I'm not trying to be funny here. This isn't like, oh, it's the champagne method, but from California. Like nothing except for the fact that they both, this is like saying, I love Sprite and drinking a Coke. It's sparkling wine. This is the whole point of this episode, so that you can be a little bit more clear when thinking about the differences. If you love Prosecco, it has no guarantee whatsoever that you are actually going to like champagne or any sparkling method made in a traditional way, or an ancestral way, or in a transfer way, or in an Asti way, or in a carbonation way. This is a literally different wine, totally different. That's like I said, Coke and Sprite. This is like saying, I love Cabernet, so I'm going to love Chardonnay. You might. You might say, but if you say, I hate Chardonnay because it's wine, so I will never like Cabernet, that's also the same. If you don't like Prosecco, it doesn't mean you don't like sparkling wine. It means you might not like a fruitier, light, not to be aged sparkling wine. So, and you've probably said, Edward, but I've heard of the Prosecco grape. You have. There is a grape in Australia called Prosecco. They might make sparkling wine with it. We're not talking about that. Glera is actually from Prosecco DOC, maybe DOCG in some spots. But anyway, Prosecco is a region in Italy over near Venice, not too far from where they make some Pinot Grigios. So anyway, there's your lesson on Prosecco. If you love it, keep loving it. That's fine. But don't then make judgments on other sparkling wines solely based on your Prosecco experience. Keep in mind, Prosecco is a super popular wine for mimosas. You have sweet and sweet, sweet orange juice, sweet, fruity, sparkling wine. A mimosa with champagne is very different. Not like intensely different, especially if you did like a demi-sec or an extra dry, but different enough. Again, different grapes. Okay. Edward, calm down. Moving on. Asti. The Asti method. You would consider this similar to a tank method, but it limits to one fermentation. Basically, they're fermenting. They're getting the whole process going at once. So you don't make a base alcohol. Base wine with alcohol and then add a little bit more stuff to keep it going a little bit more to get those bubbles. They're kind of bubbling it from the beginning. The whole goal is to capture that CO2 as they go. But because of that, it's a typically very low alcohol wine, like 5.5% to 7.5%. You may know it best. The most world renowned region for this is Moscato di Asti in Asti in Italy, over in the Piemonte, in near Barolo and Barbaresco. So then there's carbonation. This is basically SodaStream for your wine. It is take a wine and add bubbles to it. And those of you that saw my April Fool's video from last year, 15 months ago or 13 months ago or whatever it is, I blew bubbles into a glass of wine and called it sparkling wine. I mean, it's kind of what this is. I don't think they have anybody blowing bubbles into it. And you won't find too many instances of this, except for this is where I truly think that it's like the cheapest thing you can find. And that's fine. But think about it too. If you blow bubbles into wine, blow bubbles into anything. If you have bubbles to do a soda stream, it doesn't last as long as a bottle of soda. It's not as integrated. I don't know. That's carbonation. So I have listed a whole shit ton of grapes. I've listed 6 methods, one of them like in 5 different languages. So where the hell are they doing this? All over the world, like all over the freaking world, everywhere. France, of course. But in France, if it's not made in Champagne, it is more commonly known as Cremant. So what you will see on the shelf when looking for this, and the vast majority will be made in the traditional method, the Champagne method. But you'll see Cremant de Bourgogne or Cremant of Burgundy, Cremant d'Alsace, Cremant de Loire, Cremant Bordeaux, Cremant de Bordeaux, sorry. But they will use the grapes of those regions. So in Burgundy, it's... insider tip, go buy Cremant de Bourgogne. It is made with some of the greatest Chardonnay and Pinot Noir grapes in the world because it's the greatest region in the world for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, arguably. I win that argument, but it's true. Making it in a traditional method, especially if you can grab something from Chablis where it's actually pretty darn close to Champagne anyway, and you're just not paying for Champagne, you're paying for Cremant de Bourgogne. Cremant d'Alsace is using Riesling, Pinot Blanc, a couple other things. Loire, Vouvray is another way to look at it. Vouvray is a region that makes great Chenin Blanc. Sparkling Vouvray, Cremant de Loire. You can also get some sparkling Pinots in the Loire because they make really fucking great Pinot Noir in the Loire Valley, Sancerre specifically. And Bordeaux very often is going to be a sparkling Semillon. And I will tell you what, it is freaking killer. So that's France. And again, we're staying high level. Somebody's going to be like, what about Cremant de Jura? Great, yeah. Love it. Have fun. Cremant d'Auxerrois. Go to the Swiss border. Love it. There's more, but it's the freaking country. Just accept it's France. Got it. Okay. France. Spain. Ever had cava? Cava, not this is weird. This is where it gets kind of weird. Like 95% of cava is from the Cava Dio in Penedès, which is right outside of Barcelona. There's like 5% of other parts of Spain that can call it cava, but it's not from cava. I don't know, like, that's weird. I'd be like, oh, where are you from? Charlotte? Yeah, I'm from Charlotte. Cool. What part? I'm actually outside of Cincinnati, but I'm a part of the 5% that can say I'm from Charlotte, even though I'm not actually in Charlotte. So for another day. But cava, I mentioned earlier, the grapes, Zerillo, Macabeo, Parellada. Those are the cava grapes. Cava is one of my favorite sparkling wines on earth because you get Spanish wine, native grapes, sparkling wine made in the traditional method, great prices. So go buy cava. Italy, of course. We've already talked about Italy, but Prosecco, as mentioned, Franciacorta. I'm going to do a whole freaking episode on Franciacorta at some point. But Franciacorta is from northern Italy between Milan and Venice in the Lombardy region. Most of you know the name, or if you know Franciacorta, you know the name Ca' del Bosco. They do the vast majority of production that gets to the States. But again, we'll do Franciacorta. But sparkling method, traditional method, Chardonnay, Pinot Bianco, Pinot Nero, or Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc. Moscato d'Asti, we already talked about that. And sparkling wine from Emilia Romagna. Think Modena, where the greatest balsamic vinegars in the world are from. And Parma, where we named our dog after, actually. And not Parma, Ohio, Parma, Italy. But Emilia Romagna right now is getting put back on the map for their sparkling Lambruscos. Beautiful, light, super fruit, super fun fruit, not sweet. Awesome. Like, go get some sparkling Lambrusco. It's probably the cheapest sparkling wine you can get right now relative to the quality. Germany, they produce Sekt, which is a sparkling wine of types. It's from different regions. That's a whole other episode. Once I finish my sparkling wine class, I'll talk more about that too. England, this is thanks to climate change, unfortunately, because now it is warm enough in parts of England that they can at least grow. They're getting a similar climate to what Champagne has often had, where it's warm enough to grow, but cool enough to keep it high acid. So England, English wines, Gusbourne, great sparkling wine from England. You will pay a premium right now because, you know, Brexit probably fucked it up a little bit, but also lower production, and they're still trying to get their product out and put a high quality out there. So that's another one. The United States of America, Oregon, Washington, New York, all over California, Carneros, Anderson Valley, Sonoma Coast, Russian River, Napa, Monterey, Edna Valley, Arroyo Grande, Santa Maria Valley, Santa Rita Hills, and one last state that I'm definitely mentioning, New Mexico, because they make a really great sparkling wine, and it's called, I'm going to go with the dumb pronunciation, Gruet or Gruet. It's a French family that settled in New Mexico and decided to make sparkling wine. You've probably seen it on menus. It's really fantastic. Don't be afraid to buy it. It's delicious. Chile, Argentina, South Africa, Australia, Tasmania, New Zealand, all places around the world that are making sparkling wine. All you need is a cooler region or part of a region, a sub-AVA, a microparcel, something that allows you to get that barely ripened, super high acid grape, whatever the freak that grape is. It's the grapes that we talked about. So think about Chardonnay and Pinot Noir again. Now think of some of your favorite producers of these, especially ones who grow both. I bet if you looked, you would find that there are sparkling options from that winery, or at least from the region, maybe not easily available via retail, but tasting room, wine club, something of the like. They've got it out there. It goes back to that rosé episode I talked about too. If they make Pinot Noir, they probably make rosé. If they grow most wineries nowadays, if they're growing red grapes, there's a chance you're going to find a Pinot Noir. Same with this. Find Chardonnay, Pinot Noir. Someone's got a cooler ability to grow in a cooler climate cooler climate element of their production process, growth process, whatever. You know what I'm getting at. But let's go to the beginning again. Only one of the names on this list is actually Champagne, but all of these have sparkling wine. All of these regions have sparkling wine. Only one method even references Champagne sometimes, but you can still make sparkling wine in a bunch of different methods. You may love Champagne. And that is, I'm literally drinking Champagne right now. So I am not like a screw Champagne. I love Champagne. I went to Champagne. I had a blast in Champagne. I'd go back in a heartbeat. It is like one of the most amazing regions in the world. Guess what? They know that. Rather damn proud of it and charge a fuck ton for it. Champagne is great, but it can be an expensive love that's great nonetheless, but it is expensive. We talked about marketing before. If I offered you a Coke and you loved Coke, you'd probably say yes. if you didn't like Coke, you might say no or ask if there are any other quote unquote soda options. Maybe you ask if there are other Coke products. That's where we're going here. Like if I offer you champagne in my house, if I offer you champagne, you're having champagne. That is literally what I'm offering you. If I don't have champagne, I'm going to offer you sparkling wine, or I may call it cava if it's cava. But that's kind of where we're going here. Is understand, we started at the beginning, grapes, and then methods, and then regions. And when we finally got to the regions, one of the many was a little part of France just outside Paris called Champagne. If I offered you a tissue, you knew what I was talking about. Unfortunately, we're also in the world where if I offer you a Kleenex, I'm not giving you a Kleenex half the time. I'm probably giving you a Kirkland brand, as a matter of fact. But it's just where we are. And that's fine. But there's such great sparkling wine around the world. And I think champagne can scare people off. When you say champagne, like, oh, I can't, I'm not cool. I'm not fancy enough. I'm not rich enough for champagne. Like, first of all, you can buy actually good, great champagne for under $40. You're probably going to buy it in a smaller bottle. But you can get under $40 champagne. It exists. It's still really good. Actually, you know where to go? Costco. They have a Kirkland brand of Brut champagne, and it's really good. But anyway, champagne is a region that grows grapes in a method that has been documented to be the way that they made it. So it was the first way, or the most traditional way, once it hit the market. They've marketed the shit out of it. Good for them. They have succeeded. They make a lot of money doing it, but they also have great products. So like, they're not trading on name alone. But as I draw my analogies, as I always love to do, in the world of sodas versus sparkling wines, Coke is like champagne. It is the most well-known soda brand in the world. I know I'm sitting in the state of North Carolina, where Pepsi was born, but we all know that Coke is the most recognizable soda brand in the world. So that's champagne. Shit, in the Southeast, you can order a Coke and it's not a freaking Coke. It can be a Sprite. Would you like a Coke? Yes, a Sprite. It's just how it works. And if you didn't know that, fun fact, that's how it works down here sometimes in certain areas, especially in Georgia. Soda, or pop for Brendan and friends in the Midwest, soda is like sparkling wine. It's a category of product. Coke products, I would say, are analogous to doing things in the traditional method. So you're looking for Chardonnay or Pinot Noir made in a traditional method, maybe from Champagne, maybe a Cremant, maybe from California, who knows? It could be from anywhere, but you want it about as, you know what, in that method, that process that creates a great sparkling wine. And you believe that the Coke people, the champagne method, the traditional method, do it best. Pepsi would be like the tank method or Prosecco. It's an approachable beverage. It does it a little bit differently, in my opinion, a little bit sweeter. But Pepsi could be Prosecco. It's trendy. It's on, you know, it's cool. It's whatever. It's a different style. I would never mistake a sip of Pepsi for a sip of Coke. It's my palate. You may or may not, but they're using different sugars and caramel coloring and secret ingredients and stuff. Sierra Mist is like Moscato d'Asti for the sweeter fans. It is something that everybody claims they don't like, except for the people who do. And because of that, Sierra Mist is freaking rebranding to Starry, because everybody's like, ew, Sierra Mist, whatever. But then you drink it, you're like, eh, it's pretty much Sprite. Starry, pretty much freaking Sprite. Moscato d'Asti, it's a sweet drink. It's really good, actually. We're going to get to that in just 1 minute if you hang on for the end for the pairing. RC Cola, I love them, but it's like the carbonation method. It is affordable. It's approachable. It qualifies. I love RC Cola, sorry, but carbonation. Pet Nat is like Zevia, that like sort of super, I almost said supernatural, but like naturally soda with like stevia. And then there's water. Get the fuck out of here. We're talking about sparkling wine. Water has no place in this conversation. Anyway, that's sparkling wine. I'm going to leave you with two amazing pairings. One's like super obvious and super expensive, and I don't give a shit because it's still freaking delicious. And I highly recommend, if you ever have the opportunity to do it once. Make your friends pay for it, but do it. Ask for it for birthday. I don't know. Champagne and caviar. Do it. Get enough caviar. Don't do like a sip and a bite. I want you to do it in a few different ways, but do it first. There's this thing called a caviar bump. You don't have to do a bump per se, but it's sort of like when you go into a pizzeria. If you order anything other than the cheese pizza to start, you're hiding the flavors that like kind of make pizza pizza. That was not a reference to Little Caesars. Try the caviar because of the brininess, the saltiness, the the crispness of some of the flavoring in there, but yet the buttery nature, and you just wash that down with champagne. It is flipping amazing. So you got to do it. But then, so you have your little bite of caviar and champagne and caviar. Then you incorporate more salt by putting it on a potato chip or a buttered toast point, or what I love. And I think I had this, I'm blanking on the name of the place, but I've done it at home too. Little like hash browns, little, like imagine if you took a McDonald's hash brown and cut it up into like sixths, drop it, your caviar on there. So now you got salt and potato. Now you got the other great pairing, fried potatoes and champagne. And now you've got your caviar on top. And one last piece on caviar service. You always should have creme fraiche. Unless you're dairy intolerant, then don't do that. Unless there's a lactose intolerant solution for creme fraiche. But creme fraiche is basically like fatty or sour cream. It uses like every accent in the French alphabet across the two words. So that's really fun. But the full kit and caboodle of how you should, in my opinion, how you should always set up for your full experience. Because at this point, I'm about to list some ingredients. And if you're like, this is like getting out of hand order. At this point, you've probably spent $300 on your champagne and caviar. So deal with the next $9 I'm about to tell you to spend and have a really great time. So we've told you potato chips or toast points or the hash brown bites. Then hard boil some eggs. Take the white part off and separate it from the yolk. Chop up both of them. We've got one of those little hand chopper things that you pull a string and it chops everything up. Chop up the whites, chop up the yolks, put them in separate dishes. Then make sure you have your creme fraiche, and then pick an onion type that you like. And you need to do it raw, but you dice up in super tiny fashion, but not like watery, a white or red onion, raw, not sauteed, not grilled, not caramelized, raw. So you're going to do all this. Then you can also do a little bit of chives. Again, this is just all fun. You mix and match as you go. Put together your favorite stack. I think I've learned that, like, I don't even need the caviar at this point, but all of this is out of this world. So do all of this, stack them up, do a little bite, eat it, enjoy your champagne. And the other one is like really cold vodka, not with your champagne, with your caviar. That's one way to do it, but I'm not necessarily telling you to do that because I haven't done that in years. I think I did it once and it's fucking vodka and it was like, burning. So champagne and caviar is amazing. And the other one, for all the naysayers out there, Moscato d'Asti and creme brulee, especially if you can throw a little fruit on top. Moscato d'Asti has a level of sugar that can meet and exceed that of creme brulee and will highlight the flavors of both. It will not ruin your creme brulee because you need your liquid to have more sugar than your solid. And then you put a little fruit in there because Moscato d'Asti is still a wine at heart and has really beautiful, ripe, rich fruits. So as you eat the raspberry off the top of your creme brulee with a bite of the creme brulee and the crispy little top, and then you wash it down with the citrus and overripe peaches and floral aromas that are going to come out of that Moscato, you're all of a sudden going to say, holy shit, Moscato d'Asti has a place in this world, and it's in my mouth right now, and you're going to be really happy that you did it. And by the way, Moscato d'Asti does not cost a lot, so if you think I'm a fucking idiot and you don't like it, dump it out, and you lost $6. Don't worry about it. I'm not reimbursing you, though, because you're wrong. Just kidding. No one's ever wrong with wine as long as you're giving it a shot. All right. That was a lot. I talked fast. You're probably gonna have to slow this episode down or think that you already put it at 1.5 speed, but that's okay. Cause I had a lot that I wanted to go through. I'm going to post this. Like I said, I've got all the grapes on there and I've got the methods and I've got the places that they come from. I'll put these in the show notes so that you can reference them and not have to come back to this episode 20 times. You are welcome to come back to this episode 20 times, but I'll at least put those out there so that you can remember them, reference them, save them into your notes, and head over to the store and tell somebody this is what you want from the store. And maybe you even do a sparkling wine tasting. Because that's another one. If you're ready, I'm ready. I'm always ready to do traditional method from around the world or different styles, whatever you want. But until the next episode, which will feature a fantastic interview. Actually, I've got all of these interviews coming up. So you, if you're hearing this, you'll hopefully already listened to the last one with Eric Gephardt. Chef who has traveled the world tasting some of the greatest flavors on earth, meeting with some of the coolest chefs, while he himself being one of the coolest chefs, greatest chefs, nicest people I've ever had the chance to meet, and luckily am by marriage related to this guy. Go check out the last episode with him. It's called We're All Storytellers. But I've got another episode coming up. I've got by the time I publish this, I should have three interviews completed, like ready to go, and they're going to be every other week. But it will be a line from Napa Valley Wine Guide. And then I'll keep the next one under wraps because that's going to be in a few weeks and I want to get you all fucking excited. But Alon is awesome and I can't wait for y'all to hear it. He and I had a blast chatting wine, Napa, and all things about just how great this industry is and can be. So until next time, folks, thank you so much for listening. Head on over to Somme for the Day, book some shit, have some fun, get a membership, whatever you need. Oh, and one last thing. Go ahead and rate this podcast. If you like it, it helps me move up the list so more people can like it. So I would love it if you could give me a 5-star review. And if you don't want to give me a 5-star review, give me a 4, a 3, a 2, or 1, but give it to me via email instead. And let's chat so I can make this better for you. Because it'll also fuck up the algorithm and then make me look like an idiot. So 5s go on and 4 or less comes directly to me. And we can even hop on a phone call and talk about it. And maybe I'll put you on the episode so you can see how much fun it is to be on an episode of Wine Connoisseurs Rex. Thanks, everybody. Can't wait to talk to you again soon.
Well, thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram and YouTube at @som_4_the_day and Twitter and Facebook with fewer underscores, but plenty of fun content. And also, whenever you want to have the most fun, super custom, unfancy or fancy wine experience, be sure to give me a call. I'll make you the Somme for the Day. Cheers.
Rawr.